Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. If you're listening online and you want to join us, the lines are filling up, but there's still room. Pick up your phone and dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on the call, press 1. Lisa will screen your call. We can talk about whatever you want tonight. I've got a special guest with me. It's Tom Bach from OPS. We're going to be talking about oil samples, oil analysis, the OPS Echo Pure extending drains, whatever it is you want to talk about. Jump in, press 1 on your phone. Let's line up the calls early tonight because, as usual, we get towards the end of the show and we're trying to rush to get all the questions in. So if you've got a question, press 1. You'll have to talk to Lisa first, and then we'll start getting to those calls here in just a little bit. If you've got a sample, if you are using the OPS Labs and you've got a sample you'd like us to go over with you, press 1. You can give Lisa the information. She'll look it up for us, and we'll be able to go over your sample right here on the radio. Let's bring Tom on. As soon as I press the right buttons. Tom, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you doing tonight?
Good. It's been a while since I've talked to you. What have you been up to?
I know. You're on the audio road. You don't even pick me up. I'm hitchhiking here. I'm waiting to get picked up.
You've got to see our new studio.
I got it, because the last one you had was fabulous.
Yeah, this one, wherever we park it, there we are.
There you go. I already even got the outside advertising on it. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's kind of a sleeper, though. You know, we took the same approach as I do with trucks. Buy an older one and recondition it, make it the way you want it, so it's a little on the older side, but it is loaded with technology. You'd never know it.
As long as you got it remodeled the way you want it, at least she'll be happy.
She's doing the decorating. I'm in charge of the technology.
There you go. That's a good thing. Early truck. That's a good thing. Early truck driver. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's right. So it seems like every time we get together, we are getting ready for a truck show.
We're getting ready for that Great American Truck Show on August 26th to the 28th. I know I'm ready to go.
When are you going to be out there?
I'm coming out Wednesday morning with Artie. We'll get the booth set up and then be there until Sunday morning.
Okay. I think we'll be rolling in sometime, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday, or we'll be getting in and getting set up, and wonder if it's going to be as hot as it usually is.
Usually is very hot there in the setup there, that's for sure. Especially, we're in 22-119, and you got, like, what, 5 or 6 companies, 8, 10? How many companies you got signed up here now?
I don't know. Lisa's going to have to jump in and help us out with that one. Lisa? Wonder if she's paying attention.
Doesn't look
sometimes
like
she gets things, yeah, sometimes she gets things set up, and then she wanders off to do something else. Actually, maybe she's got, there she is, she's screening calls, so I guess she's doing her job. She'll let us know. We are going to have a truck in the booth, and then we'll be surrounded by all the products, the sponsors, and we've got some surprises for the show this year. That's all we're allowed to say right now.
Well, that's good. I always like surprises.
Yeah, this is a big surprise, and we won't. I don't think we're going to be able to announce it ahead of time. I'm not sure yet. Maybe they'll let us, but if not, we'll have it there at the show. Is all I can say right now.
Well, I know I'm going to be there. I hope everybody else will be there to see it. I'm sure it's going to be something special.
So what was that booth number again?
Mine is 22119. I know you got a bunch of those 22, 121, 23, 25, 27. The whole row is kind of signed to your vendors. So people.
Yeah, if they find you, then they're all set.
Right, right. Well, right. I think
you're the one they're looking. Yeah, you're the one they're looking for anyway.
Well, we usually use this one in the spot. It's the one with the line in front of us where they take a number to try to order them.
Yeah. Hey, I had a call last – well, actually, I've had a couple in the last couple weeks using different labs for samples.
Okay.
And what's the other method for measuring soot? I keep hearing numbers like 10 and 20, and I'm not really sure. Is there a way to convert that over?
Yeah, some of it, they do it by volume, and some do it by weight, and some of them do it by light, the diffraction of the light.
Okay.
I don't really know. It depends which one they are. There's some. I know that the, what is it? Come on, Tom, think of it. The cat, the whole caterpillar, they use
right.
a different type of soot level in there, and it's, sometimes it shows as much as 71, and I know, there's no real way to determine it, to carry it over, that I know of anyway.
Okay. And that was one I had last night was from a cat lab. They were using an OPS, but they were using cat for their samples. And I'm hoping he might call in again tonight. I wanted you to go over it with him.
Right.
He was showing... Go ahead.
Keep going. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go on a whole cat while you're talking and see if I can find...
Okay. He was, they recommended that he change the oil, and it was high iron, which I didn't think, well, I guess it was kind of high, 43,000 miles on the oil, and the iron had jumped up over 100. And the soot, he was trying to explain to me what the soot numbers were. They were normally running around 10, and then they were up to 20, and I really didn't know. You know, if soot was really a problem or if that was still a reasonable number. So I was hoping maybe he would call in tonight with the sample in front of him and you and I could go over that and get that figured out. Hold on. Are you still with me?
Problem. Yeah.
Now, you know, I wasn't hearing you. I think Lisa's playing around again. I think she put you back in the screening room.
Well, what I was saying was I think that from past experience, when it got around 70 or 80 is where it started to be something of concern, but I'd have to go back and look. Unfortunately, I can't get in the Holt website right now for some reason. But we can check
okay.
that, and I'll get that answer back. For there is a different way of doing it, and it's the numbers are totally different than what we're accustomed to.
Got it. Why don't we do this? I think we've got a lot of new listeners on tonight. You know, we sometimes talk about the OPS and the Echo Pure as though everybody knows what it is and what we're talking about. Why don't you give us a quick rundown of what the Echo Pure is and why we would want one on our truck?
Okay. Well, primarily what it is, it's the next generation of bypass filtration. Most of your trucks that are people want to extend the oil drain intervals, what they're going to do is they're going to put some type of bypass filter on. Now, most of the ones that are out there will just filter the solids out. Well, the EcoPure system and the OPS-1 system go the next step. What they do is they filter out the solids with a filter media, but then they allow it to go into an evaporation chamber and evaporate out the water and a little bit of diesel fuel that you get into your oil during the normal occurrence of running. So you end up taking the water out, you get less sludge, oxidation, corrosion, you get less breakdown by taking out the little bit of diesel fuel, and you end up not having to use your additives as much because the additives are not working. You know, not, they don't have to attack anything because there's no acid being built up. There's no sludge being built up, so the detergent doesn't have to react. The oxidation is not forming because the water is not there. So it filters and evaporates. So what everybody will do is they'll go 20, 25,000 miles and change a filter, take an oil sample. That oil sample comes back and tells them the quality of the oil to make sure that the key elements of the oil are sufficient enough to get them for the next 20 to 25,000 miles. And they continue to do that until the oil comes back and tells them that they should change it. And they also will double the life of their full flow filters over the course. So they'll change their full flow filters at 40 or 50,000, change the OPS or the EcoPure filter every 20 to 25,000.
So instead of, you know, the typical 12 and 15,000 mile oil change where we're doing one of two things, we're either dumping out clean oil or we've let the oil get dirty because it's not being filtered all that well, so it's already doing damage, neither one of those make a lot of sense. With the EcoPure, we're going to keep the oil really clean. So we're leaving the oil in the engine. We're going to change filters. We're going to take a sample, which brings our service cost way down, and it's protecting the engine better because the oil's staying clean all the time. And the other thing that I'm finding is just a huge benefit. I mean, I've always approached it as the cost savings, which is a big thing. But more and more what I'm finding now is another huge benefit of the program is that the oil analysis on a regular basis is really helping us identify engine problems before they become real problems.
Right, and also gives you a record of the engine. You know, just like if you took a blood test once a year or every 6 months, you'd see any deteriorations in your body chemistry. Same thing with the engines. I mean, they start to wear. They should wear in a normal pattern. Once something starts to deviate from that norm, you'll know by having the oil sample results, and those results will help you to prove warranty issues, or at least be able to ID what's wrong with the engine to be able to ensure that when they bring it to shop and they tell you need an in-frame, that they're indeed telling you the truth. You know, it's not just a bad injector or, you know, a bad cam lobe that you can just change. But you tell you need a full in-frame, you know, your oil sample is going to tell you they're probably right.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've been finding that a lot of times the calls that I get will be because something isn't running right. You know, they've got symptoms. The shop hasn't been able to figure out what it is. And one of the steps I've been using now, even if somebody does have, say, the EcoPure on, and I can go in and look at the record of their oil analysis, sometimes I can pick things up. Even if they don't have a unit, sometimes I recommend they call you just to get a sample kit. Just because we might be able to pick up something in the sample. If we start to see, you know, high soot numbers or some fuel, a lot of times we know it might be an injector or we're not getting good combustion. So we're starting to use it as more of a diagnostic tool to help figure out what's going on.
You know, it's funny you should bring up that soot level because it's one of those like 110-100 rule things. You know, if you can fix something when it's in its first stage of deterioration, it's going to cost you one unit, whether it's $1 or $10 or $1,000. If it gets down to the next level, it's going to cost you 10 times that. If it goes one more level, it's going to be 100 times that. You know,
yeah.
Soot itself, chances are the soot is either a bad timing, it's the fuel-air ratio, you got a bad air cleaner, or you're just not getting injectors are not pressurized enough to be able to inject the proper amount of fuel. If you don't fix those things, you end up getting an extra sludge. You end up getting more sulfur into the oil, so you got more acid buildup. You got more wear and tear because the soot attaches to the metal parts, and when the engine shut off, they dry and they harden. And then when you start back up, they cut grooves in the cylinder walls and the bearings and things like that. So by seeing you have a soot issue, being able to go in and fix it in its first stage, you don't end up having the next problem or the problem after that, which is going to cost you an engine. So,
what we're finding is three major issues that we're able to catch early One you just mentioned, soot, which is usually, like you said, it's fuel and air. It's the ratio in there somewhere. Either we're not getting enough cold, clean air into the combustion chamber, or we've got an injector streaming, or we're not getting, you know, good combustion, and you see soot build up, and we catch it early. And really, the shops aren't able to figure that out, you know, without the oil analysis. If the driver just tells you the symptoms, you're not really sure because they're not really that bad right away. The other thing we're seeing that we're catching early is fuel in the oil with bad injectors or something going wrong there. And I don't think people would catch that one for a very long time. And then the third is some sort of coolant in the oil. We're actually seeing a lot of that.
You're seeing a lot more of that, especially with one particular engine type, but that's probably the more dangerous of the liquid contaminants that you get in the oil, because what that does is it reacts with the zinc and some of the other chemicals in the additive package. The zinc, for instance, is there as an anti-wear. It's supposed to attach to the metal so that you don't have metal to metal. You have metal to zinc to metal. And if the zinc wears off the wall, you've got metal to metal, and you get wear very quickly. So the glycol going in there probably causes more damage to bearings and rings and anything else than any of the other liquid contaminants. And you would never know it. You would just take it and, you know, change your oil, dump it out. Oh, it looks clean. All right, let's do the next one. And just keep changing oil, changing oil, changing oil. Meanwhile, your internal parts of your engine are getting worn away because your glycol is getting in there and it's eating away at the sink.
Yeah, that's the one that we really seem to be finding when there's no other real symptoms. You know, it's not quite enough coolant loss that anybody's getting too concerned about it. It's not like they're dumping in gallons. You don't see a leak anywhere. But you've got this constant glycol intrusion into the oil that you would never know it was happening.
Correct. And, you know, again, there's some engines out there right now that are having difficulties with the oil coolers. They have a glycol going through the oil cooler, and they got bad copper tubing, and it leaks out that way. You've got some just have bad head gaskets. I mean, anything like that, you wouldn't notice it, but it's going to hurt your engine if you don't get it fixed.
Speaking of that, I'm glad we were talking about that because it reminded me of something that I need to follow up on. One of the things we've been doing quite a bit of, and I've converted two of my three trucks over, is the Evans coolant. We're finding a lot of advantages to the coolant, but one of the questions I got a couple weeks ago is if we've got Evans coolant in and we're doing oil analysis, are they going to be able to detect the Evans coolant?
They will, as long as they know that you use an Evans coolant. And they'll be looking for the chemical composition of that. I believe that coolant may have some boron in it, but I'm not certain. There will be a chemical that they use in that they'll be able to detect it.
So is that something we should be putting on the oil analysis form then?
If you're doing something out of the ordinary like that, yes. Just put down Evans coolant and it, whatever brand there is, whatever, you know, model it is.
Okay.
You know, it could be premium or whatever they call it. Just make sure you put it on there. This way, if they do see something out of the ordinary, they'll know what to look for.
Okay. It's a completely waterless coolant, and it's some other form of glycol. I forget which form is which. I always get them confused. It's propylene glycol, and then there's another form, and this is, I don't know, it's one of the two, but I'll start to put that on our samples, and I'll let everybody else know if they're using the Evans.
This way they'll know. I mean, usually they have sodium or potassium in there as extended additive-type chemicals, so they usually show up first. And it's usually in standard-type glycol, it's usually like a 4-to-1 ratio.
Okay.
So if you get 10 parts of sodium and you have 41 parts of potassium in there, you know that that's where it's coming out of the glycol or more on the potassium.
Got it. Okay. That's probably another thing that the more samples I look at, the more I start to realize one of the most important thing the end user could do is fill out their oil sample form correctly.
Well, that's probably the biggest thing they should do, because if you don't tell them how many miles are on the engine, they don't know what the wear pattern should be. If you don't tell them how many miles are on the oil, so they know that you're extending your drain, and it's not just a one cycle accumulation of wear metals, they'll give you they'll gig you for having iron at 50 when you've got 100,000 miles on the oil, and that's it's been wearing at 5 parts per million for 10,000 miles. So that's not a big thing. They think it's 50 and 20,000 miles or 15,000 miles. That's why they'll gig you on that.
Okay, and the same thing for how much makeup oil you've added or if you're using any additives.
Right, especially if you're using like Lucas or something like that, because that will immediately change your viscosity from an SAE 40 to an SAE 50, and they're going to tell you that the oil is something wrong with it because you're not within the 40 guideline that you say you have. Also, if you change oils or you start to blend it as you're going, you have to know that you're doing that, obviously. And if you tell them, they'll know when they look at it, because all of a sudden magnesium starts to go up and, boron starts to go down or zinc starts to go up, and they don't know why, and they'll start circling and telling you there's something wrong. But in reality, it's just because the formulation of the new oil you're using is different than the old oil.
Got it. What do you say we take some calls?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, let's go to Matt in Miami. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. Well, I've had the OPS for 2 years and absolutely love it.
Great.
I have more of a question about the oils for rear ends and transmission, and I sample out my radiator, too. What, most people have always said with a synthetic, they're good for about 500,000 miles, but if them samples are coming back good, is there really a reason to change it, or...
I would say no, as long as the sample's coming back good. I mean, you're looking at you're sampling the rear and the differential. You're sending it in and getting those samples back. Is that what you're doing?
Yep.
Okay. As long as they're good, there's no reason to change them.
Okay.
That's an interesting thought, Matt. I hadn't really thought of that, and it's almost obvious. We talk about trusting oil analysis because we can look at it, tell if the oil's still good or not. I had never really thought about it. I've always recommended just changing at 500,000, but if we sample and it's good, why should we?
I mean, you're obviously at 500,000 miles, you've gotten your money's worth out of the oil, but
yeah.
I just, I've been sampling every 50,000, and it's clean as can be oil, so I don't see any reason to change it.
Yeah, good thought.
I agree with you.
And then same with on the antifreeze, which, well, I plan on changing over to the Evans coolant. So I don't know if there would be a sample involved with that afterwards or not, but.
They claim, it's a lifetime coolant. If we don't have any problem with it, no intrusion, and, we don't have to add water or you don't get other antifreeze mixed in there, it's a lifetime coolant. So I'm not sure if anybody can test it or not. That would be a good question, too, how we would test it and what they'd be looking for.
I'm sure they can test it. As long as they know what the chemical composition should be and the parameters that the chemical for the additive should be, they can definitely test it and see if you're inside those guidelines. Now, they may have to go to the people and say, Evans, and say, we need your criteria, but... they could definitely test it and make sure it's still within those guidelines.
The sampling or testing you do when you install it, Kevin, is that just like a test strip that's testing for water? Or?
Yeah, we're using, I forget what that thing's called, but all we're testing for then is the percentage of water to make sure we get it below 3%.
So I would imagine if you... assuming the quality of the coolant, that it's, as long as there's not a higher percentage of water in there, it should be fine, because all you ever do to correct that is drain some out and add more straight Evans, and you bring your percentage down.
Right.
Which I don't see how it would ever get contaminated. There, you wouldn't get condensation in there.
Now, as long as we test and get the percentage down below 3%, then it's good.
Okay. Well, that's all I had. I've been using LubeTech is who I always bought my samples through for my other oils there, but not too happy. It takes over a week to get it back and sometimes 2 weeks, and I use up the last of them sample bottles. I'll be using your guys' lab again for all of it.
All right, good. They do a pretty good job.
Sounds
Once
good.
You get it within 48 hours, you got your answer emailed back to you.
Yep, that's what I like. It's send it in on Monday, and I got the email usually by Wednesday.
Yep.
All right,
that's
sounds
all
good.
Have.
All right, man.
All
thanks
right.
A lot. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
We'll talk to you again soon. We are off to Mark in Iowa this time. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 2000 Century Detroit 60 Series motor in it. It had an in-frame done at 756,000 miles, and I've now got $1,000,003 on it. And, Kevin, thanks to listening to your show, you pretty much sold me on the idea that I need to put an oil filtration system on it. My question is, I think I got a pretty strong motor. I'm not losing a lot of oil or anything like that. I can just about predict when it's time to do an oil change. I'm running straight mineral oil, but I lose, you know, maybe a gallon every 15,000 to 20,000 miles. My question for you guys is, what would be the process that I need to do in order to determine, you know, putting on this bypass system? And I'd also like to switch over to synthetic. And I know, Kevin, you've talked about different ways of doing that, adding a gallon at a time or whatever. What should be the process that I should go through before I actually install the unit?
Well, you have 500,000 on this engine since it's been rebuilt, right? A little over 500,000?
That's correct.
Okay. I would say that if you went from mineral oil and dumped it and put synthetic oil in, you're going to be using a lot more oil for the first, what do you think, Kevin, 30, 40,000 miles?
Yeah, maybe even as much as 50. Your oil consumption might almost double during that time.
Okay.
So, you know, Kevin, what I think we would recommend would be is, you know, just do half mineral oil and half synthetic and then start to add the synthetic in. As you're doing that, make sure that you let the oil sample company know what you're doing. You know, you have approximately 35% synthetic and you have 65% mineral, and then just keep trying to estimate that out, because there's going to be a point where the additive package is going to reverse, because there's different additives in the synthetic than there are in the mineral.
Okay, would it be wise to take a sample before I even put the system on, like at my next drain? Or I just had a drain done about 3,000 miles ago, so maybe like halfway through this, you know, at 10,000 or 10,000 miles.
Well, I would say it's always, you know, I don't know how you have you been taking samples before.
No, I haven't. That's the thing. I've never sampled before, so I'm just wondering if I should take one to get a general idea of the overall condition of the motor right now.
That's a good idea. I would do that, take a sample, and send it in, you know, show them how many 10,000 miles or 15,000 miles in oil, there's 500-something thousand miles on the engine, and you should be able to tell what that wear, how your wear is going at that point.
Okay.
Okay, and then watch how that transpires after that, how it relates out, you know.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
So kind of step by step, what you want to do, depending on where you're going to have it installed, if you're going to have it shipped to a shop or shipped to you, I would have that set up so that when you are about to come up to your normal oil change, let's say it's at 15,000, you've got the appointment for the installation set. Go in at 15,000, pull a sample, put the unit on, do the oil change, do a blend, however you want to mix the synthetic. You could go 50-50 to start with. And then that will put you into the cycle. That'll be your last, 15,000-mile oil change. After that, you'll go 20 to 25,000 with a filter change and a sample, and as you put in makeup oil after that, you'll be putting in full synthetic.
All right. Okay, good. Got it. All right, thanks. That answers my question. That was a lot of help. Thank you very much.
All right, Mark. Have
You're
a good
welcome.
Night.
Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Matt in South Dakota. Welcome to the program.
How you doing tonight, gentlemen?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, just to let everybody know, we are down to, about 30 minutes left in the program. If you've got a question, jump in with it now. Press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen that call, and we'll get to you, because this is about the time that the questions start coming in, and then we get jammed up at the end. So if you're going to have a question, press 1 now, and you'll be talking to Lisa. All right, go ahead.
I just had a question, actually, for both of you guys. I'm planning to hopefully get a truck in the next coming months, and I'm looking at trucks, you know, upwards of 6, 7, pushing the 800,000-mile mark. And my question is if that truck has never had an oil purification system on it, if we put the OPS-1 on it, will that kind of help nurse the engine back to good health? You know, will that help it kind of clean it out and get a good running truck, or once it's at that point, it's kind of over with?
Well, I don't know if nursing it back to good health is the way to put it, but it will help clean up any of the sludge and anything else you have up in the galleyways. That will help it clean that up a little bit. It's not going to do much for the wear that's already been caused, obviously, but by keeping the water out and keeping the sludge out and keeping the acid down, you're going to have that engine last a little bit longer. So when you put the system on, the only thing I can tell you is to save the plugs from where they take the inlet out, you know, take the oil out of, and where you're going to return it to. And then when the time comes that you're going to take that truck and trade it in, you can just take the system back off, put the plugs back in, you can put it on your next truck. So I mean, the system itself is going to be there for you for a while. It's going to take that oil that you have in there now and keep it cleaner. And you know, cut your wear down from here on in, but it's not going to help. It's not going to nurse it back to anything that's you know, if there's a bypass, you got the blow by in there and that kind of stuff. It's not going to fix it right away. That's for sure.
Okay, but it will definitely prolong the life of the engine.
Of course, you have less friction, less heat retention, less acid, so you don't get the seals and everything else eaten away and pitted and corroded. It'll definitely keep the engine running cleaner.
I've always been of the opinion that it's never too late to start keeping the oil clean.
Right. I mean, it makes sense. I just wondered, you know, if it would kind of help that older engine, or if that engine at that point would just be too late for oil purification. So.
No, not at all. I've put it on trucks with close to 1 million miles, and. Like I say, it's never too late to start keeping the oil clean. If we continue to allow the acids and the sludge and the soot and all those other things to build up over and over and over through a normal oil change cycle, then that just continues to cause those problems. So at any point in an engine's life, when we put it on there, we at least stop that progression. You know, we can't reverse it, but we can stop it. And we can start keeping clean oil in the engine, which is always a good thing.
Right. One thing you might want to do is you might want to take the first two filter changes and drop them back to, say, 15,000. Because you are going to pick up some of that sludge from the pan. You're going to pick up some of that sludge from the galleyway. And it could clog that filter up a little bit sooner than the 20,000-mile mark. But after that, you should be fine.
Good. Well, that would be a good thing, though, wouldn't it? When you think, I mean, it's just getting all that crap out of the engine and...
Yeah.
You know, if all you're doing is changing filters, then hey, you're still in the good. So,
yeah,
all right, gentlemen, thank
thing.
You very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, Tom, if you've got any questions, if you've got a sample, if you've got questions about a sample, jump in, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will get to it. Tom, a couple things before we get back to some more calls. What is the difference or the differences between the OPS-1, which I ran for years, and the new EcoPure, which I'm currently running?
Okay, the OPS-1 was a two-stage system. It had a separate filter and a separate chamber for the canister for the evaporator. The oil would go through the filter, and the filter was a cartridge filter, which meant you didn't have metal to replace. It was just the cartridge inside. You know, and it would go into the evaporator and evaporate out and return to the pan. The EcoPure system has it's a one-piece system. It has the filter on the bottom, which is a spin-on filter. Then it has the evaporator up on the top and the head, which has electronic controls in it to try to maintain the temperature level at a more consistent level. And the oil goes from the filter into the evaporator and right back into the pan there. So there's less plumbing involved. There's less, you know, lines and hose. There's less electrical because you can go directly to the alternator. You don't have to worry about going for a key switch and those kind of things. So we made some improvements to the OPS-1 and made it smaller and listened to some of the people that wanted to have a spin-on type filter. So we did that for them. Speaking of which, that spin-on filter, we are very close now to having the replacement heads that you can take your OPS-1 filter off, put a new head on, and be able to use the spin-on filters. So I would think by the end of this month we'll be taking orders for those.
Wow. Okay, well, that's exciting. So let's get down to the bottom line, and I'm going to kind of use some examples from my own trucks and from, you know, other people who have switched, and we've tracked the numbers. You know, if you're currently changing oil at 15,000 miles and you're doing a $200 oil change, you know, which might include a couple other filters and, you know, a couple other things, but we're spending $100 to $150 just on the oil change part of that service, and we're doing it, you know, 10 times a year, 8 to 10 times a year, and instead of doing that, instead of draining all the oil, what we're going to do is just change a filter and take a sample. What does our cost come out to be for, say, a 10-inch filter and a sample?
Well, usually what it is, it's about a $1,600 savings per year. You would need the initial kit, actually, is going to give you the system and three filters, so you'd be able to get going with that. And the five-pack of filters and kit's going to cost you $320. So for $320.50 a year, that's 25,000 mile changes. So you get 125,000 miles. It's $320.50 for the filters, the sample kits, and the mailers to be able to send them in by UPS. So instead of paying
yes.
for those oil changes, you're paying for those filters. Plus, you're going to get double the life out of your full flow filters. So whatever you're paying for your one or two OEM filters that you have on there, you're going to get double the life out of those. So you'd only change those three times a year instead of 15 times a year, or eight to 10 times a year, as we said.
Yeah, so I usually look at the return on investment in two ways. One, just on the lower overall service cost, which, you know, $1,000 to $1,500, $1,600 a year, depending on mileage and what you're paying for oil changes and a couple other things. And then the secondary savings for me is that I'm a big believer in synthetic oil for a lot of reasons. Fuel mileage goes up. I think we've got better engine protection, better cold weather starting, better hot weather protection or high temperature protection. But the fuel savings, we, you know, sometimes pick up another 2 or 3% in fuel economy, which can mean, you know, another $1,000 or so. So it's easy to see a $2,000 first-year savings on switching over. And the great thing about it is the initial investment is how much?
$685.50.
That's pretty hard to beat. That is a three-time return on investment, a 300% return on investment in the first year. That's pretty impressive, and that's the way we normally rate what kind of things we should be doing, investing in, and how, you know, what order we put them in. And I've always put the OPS up at the top of the list on that because there's just so many benefits. So for $680-something.
$685.50, which we would break up into five payments for them. If they
well, that gets even better.
Yep.
All right, so If they want to get some information, if they've got more questions, they don't want to ask it on the call right now, they want to talk to somebody, or they want to order a unit, how do they do that?
The best way to do is to call Artie, and his number is 203-346-1832, or they can call 866-OIL-PURE, O-I-L-P-U-R-E, and
all right,
into the ordered one.
And the one thing you didn't mention
there, Kevin, is not only do you get that dollar savings, but you also get 5 oil sample results a year that you're going to be able to watch your engine, how it's working internally. So that itself is a big piece of that that saves you more than you think.
Yeah, we've had, I've just got tons and tons of emails this year. And you know, When did you and I first meet in Dallas? When did I start using the OPS?
I want to say it was 2002 or 2003.
Okay. I think it was 02 sounds about right. I think I've been using the system almost 8 years. And in this last year, between the podcast and having you on the live show, we're seeing more and more people get involved and really pay attention to their samples and ask questions about it. And in this past year, I've just got tons and tons of emails where people, you know, write me an email and say, you know, thanks for, you know, helping me with the oil sample. We caught an injector problem and nobody knew what it was. Or, you know, we found a coolant leak and, you know, it just we're seeing more and more of that as people are starting to learn more about the oil analysis. They're not just getting the sample back now, looking at it and go, oh, well, I guess my oil's okay. They're actually starting to question things because sometimes even a sample that might be a 2, which is, you know, certainly nothing to get excited about. I mean, we leave the oil in and keep going. But sometimes in that 2, there are some clues as to what might be going on in the engine. And we're seeing more and more people pay attention to that.
And not only that, we also see things like we had with those CAT fuel pumps, where you had aluminum and fuel. We couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And then we found another one. Then when there was another one, then there was another one. Now all of a sudden we got 3. It's not just one company, you know, not just one truck anymore. It's 3 different guys in 3 different parts of the country. You know, you start to investigate and you find out that it's you know, it's the seals going bad and the fuel pump itself becoming out of round and the gear's not meshing properly and wearing and getting fuel into the oil and getting the aluminum into the oil. You know, so those kind of things we help people with all the time.
Yeah, the other issue that came up that was interesting was I had a caller who kept calling back with a sample and he was using a different lab. And the viscosity kept going down on the oil. And
right.
I kept saying, well, there has to be fuel in there. And there was no fuel showing up on the sample. And I told him that we needed to pull send a sample to a different lab. And I got talking to you about it, and it turns out that some of the labs, the way they're testing, they're not able to detect the biofuels and the ultra-low sulfur. But the other clue was that the viscosity kept going down.
That's correct. And you probably end up saving his engine for him.
Yeah. He was getting down to some really low viscosity numbers, and at that point, the engine or the oil's just not doing its job anymore.
Yeah, one of the other things that we do as a service is anytime there's a Category 3 or a 4, one of our technicians gets on the phone and calls the person who sent the sample in and makes sure, number one, they saw it, and two, to discuss what they can do to fix it. I mean, that service itself is worth a couple of bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I know the last time when we just gave out the numbers, people were reaching for their pens, so why don't you give them out one more time before I go to another call?
All right, it's 203-346-1832 or 866-OIL-PURE, O-I-L-P-U-R-E.
Got it. And they can call that number tomorrow and probably talk to Artie, huh?
Talk to Artie. He'll be the best person to talk to, yeah.
Got it. All right. Let's see. I've got Ralph in Indiana. Ralph, welcome to the program.
Good evening there, Kevin.
Hey there. What's up?
I blew another fuse again Tuesday night.
Okay, see, I had a feeling it wasn't the bump itself. I think the bump.
I hit another bump in it.
I know, but bumps shouldn't blow fuses like that. So somewhere else on the truck, we've got something grounding out when you're hitting the bump.
Yes, I called up the shop and said, all right, where's there a 30-amp fuse I can steal to stick it in this thing to get me running? I found a 20, stuck it in there, got me to a truck stop, bought more fuses so I can get down the road. And first thing in the morning, I called them up and said, look, I'm taking this thing to the yard. You all got to find this short. And this morning, I called to work, see if they had my truck done. And I had to explain to them where the fuse was and what wire was messed up on it. So I had to do their job.
Yeah, well, like I said, the first time it happened, I really believed that we know the bump caused it, but the bump isn't breaking the fuse. It's the bump that's causing. We've probably got a wire that's chafed somewhere.
They found it in the inside frame rail on the left side. It was chafing somewhere, and they had to patch it. I've been hitting every bump I can find today, and I haven't blown a fuse yet.
Okay, then that was it. I mean, if they found a wire chafed, and when you hit the bump, it was just enough to cause it to ground out, blow the fuse, and they found it, then I'd be pretty confident that's what it was.
Yeah, but like, I'm still being cautious. Well, I'm not going to get rid of my fuses. I know that.
No, that's right. Hold on to them.
Get yourself a little roll of electrical tape, too. That might be handy to have in the cab.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you again there, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the update on that. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll tell you, Tom, have you ever seen that Gorilla tape?
That stuff is excellent.
Man, I am a believer. I will never be without that stuff again. I have made some pretty wild repairs with that stuff.
I actually used it once when I had a broken hose on somebody else's car on the side of the road. I pulled over and just wrapped that tape around it and sealed it right up.
Yeah, I fixed an awning strap the other day that there's so much tension on this strap, I thought there's no way this is going to work. And it doesn't even take much of it. That stuff is amazing.
I'm going to find that guy at the truck show. That's where I bought it last time.
Yeah, I need to. Lisa bought it last time. She brought it back, and I'm like, what is this goofy stuff? What am I ever going to use this for? Once you get it in your mind and you know how it works, I fixed a bunch of stuff with it, so I need to get some of that. That's like the, you know, we used to always joke that you held things together with duct tape and baling wire, but this is the new duct tape.
I hate to say it, but it's better than duct tape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, way better.
I never thought I would say that, but this stuff's better than duct tape.
It is. Oh, Lisa just told me that you were the one that showed it to her.
Yes, I was, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and now she's making jokes. She says Gorilla Tape is better than monkey butt.
There you go. But that's by a lot.
Yeah. All right. So I've got to remember that at the show. Lisa, put that on the show list. We have to make sure we pick up some more of that stuff. Let's go to, where are we off to? Texas. Elvia, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. What can I help you with tonight? Yep.
Well, my question's kind of off the subject, but then my husband has another question about the OPS. But it's been a while since I've been wanting to ask you about what type of entity you think that we should do for our company. We're a sole proprietorship right now.
Okay.
And we just have one truck, and we're wanting to get more trucks and to get subcontractors or people under us. So
okay.
I was wondering if you would think an LLC or an S-Corp would be better, which one would be better, and if it would be okay if I did it, like, by myself, like, how they have the CDs that you can
right.
do the form yourself or online or something like that.
Yeah, you know, you really can do it yourself. It's you know, we don't have any huge legal issues when we're talking about a startup company. So really all we need to do is get the forms filed right, and it's not that complicated. What I would recommend, and this is just off the top of my head, what state do you live in?
In Texas.
Okay. I would form an LLC because they're the most flexible. They're in most states, they're easier to get started than a corporation, and they're more flexible, and the rules are really better for the LLC. And then what's going to happen is an LLC is a form of business that technically the IRS doesn't recognize. It's a state entity. And the IRS recognizes sole proprietors and partnerships and S corporations and C corporations, and they have tax returns for all those entities. But they've never created a tax return for an LLC. So once you form your LLC in Texas, then you will choose what business entity you'll file your taxes under. And more than likely, it's going to depend on the numbers, and this would be a question more for your accountant or somebody who can look at the numbers. But I would say if you plan on growing, form the LLC in Texas, file with the IRS as an S-Corp.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If it was just going to be the two of you and then the one truck, I may possibly say a partnership, but knowing that you're going to be expanding, I would form the LLC and then choose S-Corp as your status with the IRS.
Okay. Okay, and so then would you recommend that I go through a lawyer to do this, or do you think that
It's really not necessary. If you are planning on how soon do you plan on the expansion?
Well, like right now, we actually have purchased two more trucks that we're getting ready to get. We do
okay.
An oil field, so that we're
Got
getting
it.
Them ready to
okay.
do that sort
okay.
of thing.
Okay. I'm going to change my answer then. I do want you to go consult with an attorney on the startup because you're going to have some equipment issues to move into the corporation. And you're also going to be needing some advice on contracts when you start adding other people. So now is a good time to create that relationship with a good small business attorney and let him help you through the whole process.
Okay. Okay, so you would recommend that it would be a corporate business
yeah.
or something like that? Lawyer.
Find an attorney, and you can call the Bar Association in Texas, and they should maintain a list of referrals in your area where you could say you just want a good small business attorney, somebody who every day they deal with small companies. That's kind of their specialty, and they'll be easy to find.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
So LLC and file as an S-Corp. Okay.
Correct. Yep.
I think my husband is on the line. We were on three-way, so hopefully he can ask you his question because he can say it better than I can.
Yeah,
okay.
Can you hear me, Ken?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to ask you, how can I get on the email list for the results on the OPS because I tried to... get on it before, or a couple of times I wrote on that comment box that it's got there to email me the answers or the results of the sample, and they have never emailed anything. And this last sample that I took, my TVN went from 8.3, I believe, to 0.75, and between the oil sample, and by the time I got the results back, my engine broke. One of the pistons broke off, and it broke. Well, it was a catastrophic event. But they never called me, telling me that the TVN was real low, or never called me to anything, you know? Well, that seems odd. You said you sent them in and you put on there they want your answers emailed to you, and you never saw them ever?
Yes, sir.
And how long have you been doing it, and how long have you been sampling them?
I've been sampling for, I think, 2 years with the OPS.
I'll tell you, and you never got them for 2 years?
What's that?
You haven't had them for 2 years?
Yeah, I've had the OPS for 2 years, and they have never emailed me the answers when I wrote it on the box, you know, on the first sample that I sent in. I wrote it on the comment box to email it to me.
I'll tell you what, give Lisa your phone number, and when the call is over here today, I'll give you a call, and we'll talk about this offline. I will check. I don't know why they don't do that. They probably send it to you, and they give you the username and your password, which you probably didn't see. They should be emailing them to you. I don't know. I'd have to look. I can't answer your question. But going from an 8.3 to a 0.7 on TBM usually means you overheated the engine at some time, and you actually burned out the additive package. If you went from 8.3 to 7.75, so something else happened there internally. How many miles did you have on the engine?
I had 1,067,000, I believe.
Without a rebuild at all?
Yeah, without a rebuild. And
yeah, we'd have to look at the samples, but I'm willing to bet at those with those kind of numbers, you probably just had a part that fatigued and failed. That's what most likely happened.
Yeah, one of the pistons broke. The crown of the piston broke.
Right.
And that's what failed on it.
Right. That's a possibility, because at that many miles, it probably had fatigue to it, and that's something that could happen, but. Give Lisa your phone number, and we'll call you afterwards, and I'll get this checked out and see what's going on with the samples for you anyway. So
okay.
We can at least get you fixed up there, okay?
Sounds good. I appreciate you, Tom.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to put you back on hold, and you're welcome. Lisa's going to pick up that line, and we're going to wrap this up because I'm all out of time. Well, Tom, why don't you give out that phone number one more time for Artie?
Okay, to call Artie, it's 203-346-1832 or 866-OIL-PURE, and you'll ask it to hit a order line number, and you'll go right to it.
Excellent. All right, I want to thank you for coming on again, and we're going to be with you soon here in Dallas. What's that booth number?
22119.
All right. We'll see you soon.
I'll see you there, Kev. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. And stay tuned or stick around, because the live show's coming up on SiriusXM here in about 35 minutes. The website is always open. It's letstruck.com. If you're new to these podcasts, you can listen to all the shows we've ever done on the podcast. We've been doing these things for, I don't even know, all year. I know we started them this year. We might be coming up on 7 or 8 months, and we do 3 weeks. There's a lot of podcasts there, a lot of good information. You can pick them up on the website. Go to letstruck.com. If you know how to use iTunes, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, so every time there's a new one, it will download right to your computer, your smartphone, whatever device you might be using. So check that out. We'll be back here again tomorrow night to do it all over again, so join us tomorrow night. Remember, be safe, be profitable. Be responsible and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.